You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Benedict Jones. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, August 30th, 2018.
If you look at statewide, where we were building 30,000 housing units a year, and you take out roughly two-thirds of that for several years, that's a lot of houses that aren't put into a local market.
A new report by the Indiana Builders Association finds that new housing prices are increasingly pushing out first-time home buyers in the state. We'll hear from Indiana Builders Association CEO Chris Wajda about that report in today's feature.
Also coming up later in the program, after the Monroe County Community School Corporation turned down using metal detectors during a board meeting this week, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks residents and listeners how they feel about metal detectors in schools. That's coming up later in the program, but first, your daily headlines.
President Donald Trump will be in Evansville tonight. As WFHB correspondent Annie Aguiar reports, the president's visit is the first to Indiana since 2014.
Tonight's rally in Evansville is the president's second appearance campaigning for Republican Senate candidate Mike Braun after an earlier rally in Elkhart this May. Braun bested two Indiana congressmen for the Republican Party's Senate nomination in a race that raised national attention in part due to the divisiveness and hostility between the candidates. Now, Braun is attacking his Democratic opponent, incumbent Senator Joe Donnelly, in ads featuring the president's own remarks against Donnelly and a handshake between Trump and Braun. Braun called the president an inspiration at the Elkhart rally in May, according to the Indianapolis Star. The Republican hopeful also drew comparisons between him and Trump's experiences as businessmen and political outsiders. His campaign has yet to say whether or not Braun will get to address the crowd at tonight's rally in Evansville. Both Braun and Donnelly have stuck to pro-Trump messaging in their campaigns. According to a report today from the Indy Star, political scientists say the choice to stick to Trump is a smart one, given that the president carried Indiana by 19 percentage points in the 2016 election. For WFHB, I'm Annie Aguiar.
Roman Catholic clergy in Indiana are facing child abuse allegations. As WFHB correspondent Gabe Donnelly reports, the alleged abuses come amidst a national spotlight into systemic abuses by members of the Catholic Church across the country.
The Archdiocese of Indianapolis suspended Father John Meng yesterday due to an individual's report that they were abused by him several decades ago. The Archdiocese has reportedly contacted police. Father Meng is a former priest for the Archdiocese of Indianapolis who retired in 2009. According to the Archdiocese, while investigation proceeds, Father Meng is prohibited from acting in all public ministry. Meng denies the allegations of abuse. The allegations against the Indianapolis priest come just days after the Diocese of Gary, Indiana, released a list of 10 former priests it found guilty of sexually abusing children. The Diocese of Gary released a list of 3 living and 7 deceased clergy members it found guilty of abusing children. The list does not say whether the men ever faced criminal prosecution. The document does include the actions taken by church officials in response to the allegations. The 3 living men are reportedly no longer acting in public ministry. Gary, Indiana, Bishop Donald Hying responded to the list of 10 clergy members the church found guilty of abuse by affirming his commitment to the protection of children. In agreement with him is the Archbishop of Indianapolis, Charles Thompson. Archbishop Thompson released a statement calling for renewed transparency in light of yesterday's allegation. The statement reads in part, quote, "It is deeply painful and shameful that so many lives have been so wounded, broken, and scarred for life. These are very tough times, and we have some very rough waters to navigate. We must do everything necessary to make sure neither abuse nor cover-up ever happens again." Unquote. The allegations of child abuse in Indianapolis and Gary come after Pennsylvania grand jury report found that 300 Catholic priests had abused at least 1,000 children over the past 70 years. Ecclesiastical leaders in Pennsylvania also allegedly encouraged victims to avoid contacting the police. The Archdiocese in Indianapolis is encouraging anyone who may have been victimized by church leaders to contact the police. Reports can be made directly to the Archdiocese by contacting their Victim Assistance Coordinator. Those who feel they may have been victimized can also visit bishopaccountability.org, a Catholic advocacy group documenting abuse cases. For WFHB, I'm Gabe Donnelly.
Recess is over. The owners of the 18 and over nightclub Kilroy's Recess in Bloomington have closed down their business. Kilroy's Recess is being remodeled into a traditional bar named Kirkwood Stacks. The closing comes less than a year after Recess opened, replacing Kilroy's Dunkirk. Recess attracted controversy almost as soon as it opened. Bloomington residents, including Mayor John Hamilton, criticized the business for its underage party goers. Hamilton criticized the venue's proximity to other bars downtown and worried that underage IU students would be drinking. Community outcry peaked last August after the club's Twitter account invited then-visiting IU alumnus Mark Cuban to check out the club with promises of, quote, underage girls, unquote. Multiple local businesses accused Kilroy's Recess of promoting rape culture, sexism, and misogyny. Local brewery Switchyard Brewing said it would not distribute to any Kilroy's location in response. The address has a license to sell liquor under Kilroy's Dunkirk LLC, but the license for Kilroy's Sports Bar on Walnut Street will be reviewed by the Monroe County Alcoholic Beverage Board at City Hall next Wednesday. Bloomington residents tried unsuccessfully to have Kilroy Kirkwood's alcohol license pulled by the board in April.
The Monroe County Commissioners approved a one-year collective bargaining agreement with county jail staff yesterday. County Attorney Jeff Cockrell told commissioners yesterday that the agreement could eventually lead to pay increases for jail employees.
It's a one-year because when we were looking at the salaries, we do not feel that they are in line with any standard or market. And so the thought was we'll make this a one-year agreement, and within the next year we would really look and study that issue and come back probably with a recommendation or an agreement that would put them at more of a market-based level.
Cockrell said employee retention is partially driving the salary review.
The example I would give is Morgan County is starting their salaries at quite a bit higher level than ours. Mm-hmm. And so that really is a trigger because we've lost a lot of, or at least some employees to Morgan County based upon the salary wage levels.
Jail Commander Sam Crow is not party to the contract, but he voiced his support for it.
And I support it because this is something that the jail staff have collectively come together, and these are suggestions that they have to improve their working environment, their morale, you know, and just the overall well-being of the center. So it is something that is strongly supported by the administration.
Other aspects of the agreement impact training, overtime, and sick time. Cockrell explained that training will no longer be counted as overtime if staff members are given adequate notice.
If someone completes all the training and has at least a year of service, they will get a $200 bonus, which is kind of equating, but it also makes sure we get them in the door for a year before they get that payment. Sick time payout would be similar to what we do at the Sheriff's Department with the merit deputies, where after 10 years, they would be eligible to have a percentage of it. A percentage of 4 weeks essentially paid out upon leaving it. I would say that at this point, only 7 of the over 60 members of our jail staff would qualify for that, which is one of the issues we're trying to work on.
The jail's collective bargaining agreement takes effect January 1st, 2019. For WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Benedict Jones. Support for WFHB is provided by attorneys Eric Slotograph and Ben Niehoff. Slotograph Niehoff is located at 200 East 3rd Street in downtown Bloomington, assisting families and small businesses in meeting the legal challenges of life, providing estate planning and wills, as well as family law services. More information is available at 812-332-6000 or at slotographlegal.com. Slotograph Niehoff, law for business, community, and life.
Home prices across the state are rising. That's according to a report released this month by the Indiana Builders Association. CEO Chris Wajda says the average home price has increased by $6,000 since last year. Wajda says the Indiana Builders Association report finds that the Great Recession stalled home building and that demand has outpaced the supply of new homes across the state. Adding to that pressure are higher prices on home building materials. Canadian pine and Chinese steel and aluminum prices have soared as the countries have increased tariffs on the U.S. Wajda talks about the housing market in Indiana and the Indiana Builders Association report in today's feature report.
Well, we saw a decrease in single-family permits across the state of Indiana in the month of June. We do know that we've been increasing single-family starts over the last couple of years. We're certainly not back to where we were in the early 2000s in terms of housing starts across the state, but things had been trending upward. We saw a decrease in the month of June. We're hopeful that it's a blip on the radar, but because we do know that there's still demand out there, but some issues that we're concerned about certainly relate to pricing of materials that continue to escalate, as well as shortage of labor across the state. We'll be curious to see what the July single-family starts look like across the state. We do know that there are several areas of the state that are still the market. You know, all real estate markets are local, and we do hear that in many areas of the state, the demand for new housing is still very strong, but the outlier there is the concern of rising labor prices and material prices that, you know, will continue to make the cost of a single-family new home less affordable, and that is of concern certainly not only for the association but for our members as well, because as new home buyers enter into the market, they all have a price point where they're looking for a new home, and if they can't find a new home at the price point that they can or are willing to pay, then they look elsewhere or they drop out of the market completely. We've seen the increase in the cost of lumber nationwide since the beginning of 17 has driven up the price of an average single-family home by more than $6,000. And certainly other material, you know, price increases, from steel and aluminum, you know, all the various products that go into a house have seen, many of them have seen price increases as well. All those go into play, and as well as, you know, shortage of laborers in the construction industry, which means it's just taking longer to build a home in many cases across the state because fewer and fewer subcontractors out there to perform the work. So obviously those two factors are playing into the cost of housing, but demand has been, you know, fairly strong over the last year to 2 years as we've came out of the recession, and you know, single-family housing starts went from over 30,000 a year down to under 10,000, and you know, we're bounced back a little bit to somewhere in that 15,000 range. Is 15 to 16,000 single-family housing starts across the state of Indiana is kind of what we're projecting for 2018. So we're heading back in the right direction, but you know, when you see a drop month to month and year over year, that always gives pause to some, and we're hopeful that it's a one-month issue, and you know, things start to rebound once we get the July numbers in. But you can't deny the fact that the increases in the price of materials and certainly the challenges that we face in the labor force are all things that will play into consumer demand moving forward. Well, what you have certainly on the new home market and the existing home market is the inventory levels in many areas across the state are at record lows or very low levels of housing inventory on the existing side and the new home side. And that is due to, you know, we've had a demand in what we've seen in folks entering the home buying process, but the choices available are maybe less today than they were several years ago, and some of that is to, as I mentioned earlier, the lack of production that we had through the downturn in the economy, and things haven't ramped up quite as quickly as maybe they have on the back end of a recovery in years past. And if you take a market, you know, certainly if you look at statewide where we were building 30,000 housing units a year, and you take out roughly two-thirds of that for several years, that's a lot of houses that aren't put into a local market. And as things start to pick back up and the demand's there, you know, certainly on the new home construction side, for example, in our association alone, we went from over 7,000 member companies to down under 3,000 member companies. And that's builders and remodelers and subcontractors to the residential construction industry. You're taking a lot of companies out of the market. And so even though demand starts to pick back up, the labor is not there to meet, you know, the demand that you can ramp up overnight necessarily. Now is still a very good time to buy a home, right? Mortgage rates, even though they have crept up a little bit recently, are still, if you look at historical numbers, still very low. And, you know, there's builders out there putting houses in the ground, and you know, we still feel that with the economy still moving forward at a strong pace, and certainly here in Indiana, our state has done some very good things to weather the downturn to a certain degree, and certainly have ramped up with a lot of new companies locating in Indiana and or expanding their operations in Indiana. So a lot of new home construction is tied to how the economy is doing locally and or statewide, and those factors are all very positive here in Indiana.
And that was Indiana Builders Association CEO Chris Wajda speaking about the housing market across the state of Indiana. Support for WFHB comes from listeners like you and from the IU Health Foundation, where local gifts stay local, serving patients for a healthier Bloomington.
Support also comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
The state of Indiana is releasing funds for school districts to purchase metal detectors. The program, championed by Governor Eric Holcomb, allots one handheld metal detector for every 250 students. Voices in the Street asks listeners whether they believe Monroe County Community School Corporation should implement the program.
It's a bunch of crap. I teach in not a public school system, but in a community college system. I just don't think that it makes anybody feel safer. I just think that it makes people feel more afraid. It makes me, as an educator, feel more afraid rather than less afraid.
I don't know a lot about other schools. I just know about the schools that my grandchildren have gone to, and I don't see a reason for it. These children are very low-key. I don't see any danger in these schools.
I mean, general security is always a concern, but I think it's kind of a tedious task to check every single student as they enter the building. I feel like there's got to be better ways about going about this.
No, I don't think it's going to be very helpful, but not because we should sit around and do nothing, but I can think of 149 reasons why that may not work in keeping guns out of school. And since that, I'm sure that there are also, as they're you know, spending money on the technology of metal detecting wands, is what they are. They're probably also in, you know, invested in 3D printing, which is a new hot technology. You can go and pay a little money and print out, now we know, guns. So what does it matter if you can just make one right in the school out of plastic?
Yeah, there's, I think there's advantages and disadvantages to it. I think not, it could make kids feel safe, and it could also make them more scared than they normally would be.
I don't think it's a great idea. I don't think they're going to be that effective. Of course, they have plastic guns now.
I personally think it'll help. I don't know how probability that is. Like, I feel like that's kind of insane to go up to every student and do that, but I definitely think that's a step in the right direction as far as trying to keep our students safe, because it has become a problem.
It's like if a kid is really motivated to do something like that, they would probably find a way around it, like if they were really thinking about it. I mean, yeah, it might help someone who's impulsive or who's like not thinking through what they're doing, but if someone was thinking through what they're doing, they might try to find a way to do something anyway. And then I think just, you know, the cost of it, and then just the effects that it could have mentally on the other children, I just don't really see that there would be a huge benefit, or if it would really even be all that preventative.
My kids go to school at Harmony here in town, and they've never had issues with students bringing weapons. And so I would think it's a cultural thing. And I don't know if this is just a knee-jerk reaction to stuff going on in the country right now with regards to school shootings and stuff like that. So beyond that, you know, I don't know. The city also spent a whole bunch of money on a tank that I don't think they need. So
I feel like trying to cure the symptom of a problem without really trying to get to the root at it, I think is more distressing, you know? So it's like, it's the quick fix, but it's all really temporary and short term. You know, I wish there was more money and more mental health resources and more counseling and people really addressing, you know, toxic masculinity. That would be a lot more, I think, useful and beneficial in the long run, and people would at least feel more complete, more whole as human beings instead of locked down. You know, if you turn the schools into prisons, what are we going to be producing? Not citizens, you know?
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
WFHB invites you to The Age of Cindy, a joint celebration for beloved WFHB volunteer Cindy Bollet's 60th birthday party and WFHB's 25th anniversary, Thursday, August 30th, starting at 6 p.m. tonight at the Players Pub. Musical guests include the Uketones, Opal Fly and Kapow, Mercury Johnson and the Evinrudes, and singer-songwriter Bob Lucas. All proceeds benefit your community radio station, WFHB. So come celebrate the Age of Cindy and 25 years of WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Annie Aguiar, Gabe Donnelly, and Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Voices in the Street was produced by Jenna Jankowski. Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumstein, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Benedict Jones.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Big Talk with Michael Glapp, a WFHB news and public affairs program highlighting the issues, events, and people in South Central Indiana. That's coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcasts of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.